Paul, I've got to ask you about this. I don't know if you know about this or not, but Hillary Clinton, when she was talking to the late Lawrence Rockefeller, apparently had a copy of your book, Are We Alone?, and was trying to talk to him about extraterrestrial life. Lawrence Rockefeller, very interested in it, funded some research and surveys, but it looks like Hillary was meeting with him on his farm, holding your book. Did you know about that at all?
Yes, I did. I've seen the photograph, and I've had contact with Lawrence Rockefeller some years ago.
What do you think those two were trying to talk about?
Well, they may have been talking about something completely different, and it could be that that Mrs. Clinton was simply carrying the book to read on the train on the way home or something.
You never know.
I can't get to you. You'd have to ask her.
You never know. We left off before the break talking about the kind of life we would expect to find and what would excite a scientist, what would excite Paul Davies. And let's elaborate a little bit more on that. If we found life out there beyond, our planet, into the other planets, and it was, organisms to be sure, that you believe is still as exciting as almost finding a little bird or a rabbit or something, I would guess.
The key thing is life, and mostly almost all life on Earth is microbial, and so we need only think about finding microbes. But one microbe on Mars would suffice to make the point if we could be sure that it started from scratch independently of life on Earth. And the point I want to make is that we know Mars and Earth trade rocks, and they have been throughout their history. And microbes can hitch a ride on rocks and travel from Mars to Earth or in the other direction. So it seems that if you get life on one of those planets, you get it on both in pretty short order. So we do find life on Mars. That won't necessarily answer the question, has life happened more than once? And that's the key question we want to answer. So it would certainly be exciting to find life on Mars, but unless we could be sure it was independent of life on Earth, then we still wouldn't know. Maybe life is just a freak accident, it's just happened once, and it's splashed around a bit.
In reading The Eerie Silence, what would you like people to come away with?
Well, I think two things. One is that this search is thoroughly scientific. It's carried out by professional astronomers with the highest standards of scientific integrity. It's not a bunch of gung-ho amateurs who are credulous and dreamers. These are professional astronomers. And the second thing is that there are many other ways we could go looking for ET, and I've given many examples of them in the book. I've talked about looking for messages in the genomes of terrestrial organisms. I've talked about the possibility of looking for traces of extraterrestrial visitation on Earth 100 million years ago. There's no particular reason they would have come recently, and we could go look for those things. But in particular, what I set great store in is the search for the shadow biosphere, looking for the second sample of life that is so crucial to this enterprise. If we know life has happened more than once, then we can be pretty sure the universe is teeming with it, and that's an enormous boost for the whole SETI enterprise. But in the absence of having a second sample of life, we simply cannot be sure that we may well be alone in the universe. So looking for the shadow biosphere, which is the term that we now use to mean the possibility that life has happened more than once here on Earth, and that intermingled among all the microbes that we know and love might be some microbes representing a different type of life. So that is life, but not as we know it, right here on Earth, right under our noses, intermingled with the life that we see. And I think there is a good opportunity that if it's there, we'll find it within a few years. I'm pleased to say this research is being funded, and many of my colleagues are hot on the trail for looking for this shadow biosphere, this life 2.0, right here on Earth.
If you were speaking before a group of those who believe that they've seen UFOs, believe that they've been abducted by extraterrestrials, believe that we have been visited in the past and continue to be present. What would you tell that group, Paul, speaking before them? How would you start?
Well, I start by saying that that has nothing to do with SETI. You know, SETI is a scientific project. It is searching for radio signals coming from very far distant extraterrestrial civilizations, if they're out there. The stories of little green men and flying saucers and so on belong in the same realm as ghost stories and fairy stories. This is not a scientific thing, they're stories. Many of my colleagues just sort of shrug it aside and say, well, it's complete nonsense. What I've tried to do in the book is not be dismissive, but to talk about my own involvement in trying to solve some UFO cases. And I knew Alan Hynek. He was the chief scientific advisor to the U.S. Air Force Project Blue Book, which for 20 years assessed thousands and thousands of reports. I visited Alan Hynek in his home just outside Chicago. We looked through reports together. He had a whole room full of, in those days, paper files. And over the years, I've had success in explaining a number of reports. And the most dramatic cases are, of course, the alien abductions. And I think most of those cases are explained in terms of sleep disorders, things like lucid dreaming and sleep paralysis. I've suffered from these myself. I know full well that they give the sort of impressions that people report when they talk about alien abductions, and I think that explains a very large fraction of them. The lights in the sky, there are many, many different types of explanations for those things. But whatever it is, I think it's got nothing to do with extraterrestrial life or extraterrestrial intelligence. It really says more about human beings than it does about extraterrestrials.
Are you, as a scientist, perplexed by just what is life? Why are we here? What's it all about?
Well, I'm certainly perplexed by the nature of life and its origin, and I think all scientists are. We have a very good explanation for how life evolves. It was given to us by Darwin 150 years ago by variation and natural selection. So we understand the mechanism of evolution. What we don't understand is how life came into existence in the first place. The difficulty there is it happened a long time ago. We may never have a blow-by-blow account of exactly what happened. But, of course, to answer this question, are we alone in the universe, we don't have to have a detailed account. We just need to know, was it a very likely event or a very unlikely event? And that's the thing that I keep coming back to. We have to search for this life 2.0 or the shadow biosphere or something like that. And that would demonstrate that it is a likely event. At the moment, it could. We can't be sure it wasn't just a freak accident. So I'm baffled by life, by its enormous complexity, by its extraordinary capacity to organize, and I think anyone who studies life can't fail but to be struck by how peculiar it is in relation to other physical systems that we study. And then there's the broader question about why do we live in a universe that's fit for life at all? That is, why is life permitted to arise anywhere? And that's a deeper question about the nature of the laws of physics and how the universe came into existence. I've written books about that too, but sure. This more recent book is specifically about the search for extraterrestrial intelligence.